Hey there, it's Lacey J from Space Bear Media, the makers of Lost in My 40s. Did you know that you can go to spacebearmedia.com right now to access all our content, including our weekly video pre-shows where your hosts ponder ethical questions related to the week's episode and answer some fun questions just for, well, fun. Speaking of fun, if you have it, thanks to our content, please consider rating or reviewing Lost in My 40s on your favorite app or recommend us to a friend who loves Lost. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. It's Lost in My 40s, Season 2, Episode 18. It's called Dave. It's a Hurley episode. It's a Ben episode. How's everybody doing?
Good. How about you?
I'm all right. Last week, I was drinking Kahlua. This week, I'm eating spaghetti. Can you hear? Nom, nom, nom. All right. Ben, before you take us down Hurley Road, could you update us on
rankings? Hurley Highway.
Hurley Highway, just, okay. You take us down the Hurley Highway.
Close to Hershey.
Can you please update us on where our rankings are?
Yeah, well, since you asked so nicely, I can.
Mm. Okay.
We still have Mr. Echo in first place with 114 points. The race for second, third kind of tightened up last week. We ended up with Locke with 62 points and Kate just behind him with 59, and then Jack just behind them with 57. So nice horse race there. Bottom of the barrel, we still have Charlie. We had a little bit of jockeying where Mr. Cooper moved into second place, you know, faking your death and being all, you know, every time he shows his face, he ends up going to the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, for sure.
That put Randy Douchebag Nations into third place and knocked Ethan out of the top or out of the bottom three.
Randy. All right. Tell us more about Hurley, Ben.
I will. We start, it is day 62 on the island, and we find Hurley and Libby kind of power walking down the beach. Well, I'd say Libby is power walking down the beach with Hurley sort of fumbling behind her. Yeah. Obviously he's struggling. He's sweaty and doesn't look terribly happy. And then Libby tells him that exercise is addictive. Hurley admits that he needs to drop a few pounds. But then Libby kind of says, well, you know, some people just have a slower metabolism. And Hurley at that point admits that he's sick. And when Libby kind of tries to dig in, kind of like, wait, what do you mean sick? He kind of tells her it's bad.
I wish exercise was addictive. I hear that, but I must just be addicted to other stuff.
No,
I just think you get all hot and sweaty and out of breath. That's not addictive.
No, I think it's the endorphins, right? Is what would be addictive. Yeah.
Yeah. When I get started and I get into a groove, then I want to go out and take my nice long walk/jogs, and you know, I look forward to it.
Yeah.
But it's getting myself motivated to start. That's the issue.
Okay. Yeah. Generally the endorphin rush that you normally get from exercise doesn't come in until after your brain tells you to quit. That's the entire thing about like a runner's high is like, if you stop when you get tired, you'll never get that. It's when you push through that.
That's why I never got it.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Like, okay, yeah. I thought the same thing.
Let's get a beer.
Yeah, I used to be a bit of a runner, and the first few times, like, I'd go out and running and be like, this sucks. I'd get tired. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to walk for a while. This is stupid. And then I had one day where I just said, I was like, no, just keep running. Just do this last like half mile or whatever. And I fought through it. And then when I got through that half mile, I was like, wait a second, I feel great. And I ended up running like twice what I had done originally. Mm-hmm. And that was my first time marathons. Really having the runner's high. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm cool staying home. It was fine.
Yeah. I am too. For the most
12 ounce curls.
Yeah. All right. So we're in the jungle.
Yeah. Hurley tells her it's bad. We cut to the jungle where Hurley pulls some vines away from a hollowed out tree trunk or some shit like that, and reveals this giant stash of Dharma Initiative food. There's peanut butter, pears, crackers, potato chips, oranges, kidney beans, cereal, marshmallows, and a metric shit ton of Dharma Ranch composite.
Ew.
Sounds appetizing.
Yeah.
The people at the Dharma Initiative, I don't know who they are yet, but they fucking love their ranch. God damn it.
Seriously.
It lasts 25 years.
They're not my kind of people. I would like blue cheese. If you could make it, if you could make it last 25 years, I'd do it.
You do what? The blue cheese?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right.
I dip all kinds of things in there.
Oh, I know. Wait a second.
So he tells Libby that when they crashed that he had lost a few pounds and, you know, he wasn't turning any heads or whatever. But then they end up finding the hatch and then they end up finding the food. And sort of brings them to this situation. It's like, look, I'm still here and I've got all of this food all around me. And Libby encourages Hurley to change by getting rid of it. And at that point, some string music starts to come up and, Hurley just starts like tearing open bags and opening up, you know, big old gallon things of ranch and just throwing it all over the jungle floor.
I understand the symbolism. Yeah, I understand the symbolism.
That's such a waste
of
food for the others.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
I just go distribute it, just put it out there and said, have at it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't like seriously. That. I just destroyed it.
Yeah, I thought it was stupid. And the entire time, like, Libby's just sitting there, like, clapping and laughing. Ah, she looks like a fucking moron while he's throwing chips all over the place. I totally understand where they were trying to do with this scene, but it really just kind of pissed me off more than anything. Maybe.
Yeah, and I get it. And, like, I saw, like, he had genuine joy on his face that he was able to do that and let go of that, which is, like, a lot of what we talked about in last week. You know, Locke couldn't let go of his dad, and this was Hurley kind of like letting go of the power of overeating has over him, which is obviously like his stress response, right?
Yeah.
And so I got that, but I thought that it's one of the times where I thought the writers kind of went wrong because that moment was overshadowed by the thought of why are you wasting food? You're stranded on an island.
That's the first thing I thought when he started doing it. I'm like, wait,
And I think
let's burn all the heroin. Like, well, no, there's medicinal value for that. Same kind of thing here. Like, you may be at a point in the future where a bag of potato chips is the difference between life and death. You're on a fucking island, so like.
Yeah.
Jack has all the fruit, so I
think that that moment, like the triumphant moment for Hurley emotionally, was unfortunately overshadowed by the ridiculous waste. Anyways.
Yeah. So once all of this food is strewn about the jungle floor, Libby asks him how he feels. And he says, free. And they hug and they almost start to kiss. But right before that happens, Jin and Sun come running by and they say they found something.
Like this part of somebody the found scene something. Had like strong. You wanna kiss the girl kind of vibes.
Yeah, totally.
Also, how come all these people are running through the jungle and nobody stops to say, why is ranch on everything?
Yeah, where'd that come from?
They might have.
Nobody notices. They're, like, it's fucking ranch everywhere.
If somebody said what they were running from, they might have thought that there was stuff that just got fucked up in the drop. Could just be food that fell out of the pallet or something like that. If they knew,
yeah,
what they
but
were
they're
running
toward
see.
It. They don't know. They don't know it's a pallet of food yet.
Yeah,
but,
We don't know that they don't know. They just said they found something.
Right. Anyways, so, I still think I would be like, "What's? Why is there ranch dripping from the trees?" But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Is this heaven? Anyway, so we cut to a clearing where a bunch of survivors are kind of arrayed around this pallet of parachuted supplies, apparently, you know, dropped from the sky. So Charlie asks if anybody saw a plane. And then people before long, they just start fighting about what, you know, who's going to get what food.
They become people.
Isn't it this scene where Sawyer's like, tattoo, but, you know, decided not to say anything.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The plane.
Did you see the plane? Yeah, exactly.
That's the second time he's used Tattoo is a nickname for someone because he called Walt Tattoo. Yeah.
Yep. He's running out of clever nicknames for people. But for there, he could use it, you know.
I'm surprised that he hasn't called Charlie a hobbit yet.
He does. Yeah. He does call him a hobbit in a later season. Yeah.
That's awesome. Funny.
Yeah.
So Charlie says that somebody should manage the food, and Sawyer immediately snaps back, like, you baby napper.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Charlie suggests Hurley because he had done it before when he was managing all the food in the hatch. And yeah, Hurley is, and Hurley is not having it. So Libby then just tells everybody, says, well, why can't everyone just take what they want?
Oh, my God. And then Sawyer says, great plan, Moonbeam. And after that, we can all sing Kumbaya and do Trust Falls.
That was funny.
See, Sawyer needs to make sure that he keeps his caloric intake high, because coming up with that much like cleverness on demand like that is very, very taxing.
What, does that burn calories?
Burns a lot of calories. Oh, yeah.
Uses a lot of brain cells.
Charlie was excited. He's like, there's risotto.
I know. You know? Risotto. Nice. Yeah. So, while people are kind of complaining about food and starting to fight about it, Hurley sees this bald guy in a bathrobe kind of on the other side of the crowd. And the dude's sort of like kind of smirking or smiling at him. And then Hurley's face is sort of like, you can tell he recognizes this guy, and he seems a little kind of like, what the fuck? And then the bald guy turns and runs away into the woods. Hurley takes off after him with the people still fighting over the food. He ends up running through the woods, and then he ends up like tripping over a tree root or something like that and falls down. And when he picks his head up, he sees one of the man's slippers. The guy that was running was wearing a pair of slippers, and he sees the slipper, he grabs it, and it's like right there in his hand, and he goes, uh-oh. And that brings us to the title screen.
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, and that was the Cinderella moment. So they're visiting all the Disney princesses in this episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The slipper.
So now we come back from the title screen. Hurley is sitting on the beach holding that same slipper when Libby walks up. And she asks him who he was looking for when he ran away earlier. Hurley tells her that he doesn't want to talk about it. And then Libby sort of muses about the food falling from the sky right after he destroyed his stash. And then she tells him that she's proud of him for not freaking out.
They're so sweet. And yet
she has no idea that he's freaking out.
Yeah, yeah. Seriously. He's like, it was a different freak out, a totally different variety of freak out.
Mm-hmm.
So we come to flashback one, where Hurley is in an office with a psychiatrist, and he's robed. So I guess we assume that he's in a mental hospital. The doctor asks him about his diet, and then asks him if he's still mad at his mother. Hurley says he knows that his mom put him here because of the accident, to which the doctor urges him to discuss the accident. Hurley says, I don't want to talk about it. Then the doctor asks him if he'd made a list of things about himself that he likes. And Hurley was like, well, Dave didn't do the exercise. And the doc says, well, you know, Dave is not always the best influence. And Hurley says, well, he's the most normal person here. Sane or normal, something like that. He says, he's the most normal person here.
He's the most normal person in here. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the doc is like, okay, but he doesn't really want you to change, does he? So we're still in a flashback, and we cut to a basketball court where the bald guy in the robe that we had seen on the island running through the woods is there.
Can I just stop here for just one fucking second? And I have been in a mental hospital. I committed myself in my 20s and spent a week in a mental hospital when I was going through some stuff. And nobody wore fucking bathrobes. I don't know what the hell this is. Like, what is this idea that if you're in a mental hospital, you walk around in a fucking bathrobe? Like, no, we had clothes.
But it looks
we got
like
dressed.
They all do.
No, yeah. it's such that a Hollywood thing. Yeah, it's such a Hollywood thing. And no, like, you're in a hospital, you don't just walk around in a fucking bathrobe. That's all I have to say about that. want to throw that out there.
Well, a bathrobe seems like a bad idea to me anyway, because usually if you have a bathrobe, then you have like a belt that goes around
it.
And I would think belts would be a bad idea in a mental hospital.
Yes, they do. They definitely take everything from you that you could try to kill yourself with. And arts and crafts is a real thing. I actually, when I was in, that is true. They do make you do arts and crafts in the mental hospital, at least the one I was in. So anyways.
That sounds nice. I like
it. It was all right.
So but now we cut to a basketball court where the guy in the robe, who I think we now assume to be Dave, is playing basketball with a bunch of the other patients, and they're all just they're throwing the ball around, and one guy's like just running with it and not dribbling or whatever, and Dave is just sort of screaming at everybody. He's hilarious. So Hurley's there, and Dave asks him what's up, and Hurley says that Dr. Brooks says that Dave is like really, really negative. And Dave is like, well, duh. But then he tells him that the doctor is just he tells Hurley that the doctor is a quack and that he's trying to get in his head, and that they've got more important things to focus on. And Hurley's like, important things what? He's like, well, taco night. And then he starts just like saying, yo, are we going to have hard shell or soft shell? Are we going to have, you know, whatever, sour cream or salsa or whatever?
Must be Tuesday.
Yeah. And then he ends it. He's like, Noche de tacos, amigo. Which
he didn't say that. Did he really say that?
Yeah.
Night of tacos.
Yeah. Night of tacos. So I love this actor, Evan Handler. Have you guys ever watched Californication?
No.
Yes.
So good. Yeah. This actor, isn't it?
Charlie Runkle. His character is so fucking funny in that show. If you have not, well, I think we plugged Californication before, but
yeah, I think we've mentioned it. Yeah. Yeah.
So, back in the hatch, Jack is treating Locke's leg injury from the doors, the steel doors in the last episode. And Jack says that he thinks it's a hairline fracture and that, Locke's going to need to stay off of it for a couple weeks. He's a little dismayed about that. And then Jack suggests that he could use the wheelchair on the beach, to which Locke emphatically says, like, no.
Yeah.
So Kate mentions that there were some crutches that they found somewhere. Locke tells Jack, when they start talking about Henry, and Locke tells him that Henry could have escaped, but he came back to help me. He's kind of trying to be an advocate for Henry at this point.
Henry is convincing him. One step at a time that he's a good guy. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, and that was part of the deal. Henry was like, you have to protect me from, you know, rest of your group.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's definitely after that one, you know, thank you for not leaving me or whatever. He feels like he's got somebody there that he can trust, which is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. But Jack kind of snaps back when he says, like, the only reason he came back to help you was because he thought his story was going to check out. About his wife being buried there.
Yep.
So in the armory, we've got Saeed and Ana Lucia interrogating whoever, well, Henry, whatever. We're going to call him
let's
Henry.
Just keep calling him Henry for
we'll
sake
call him Henry.
Of, yeah, they do. They yeah. keep calling him Henry.
They keep, yeah. Henry is in there on his knees and then bound at the wrists. And he says that when he found Henry, he was already dead. His neck was broken, and that he was part of this search party looking for this guy. And Saeed pulls a $20 bill out of his pocket and shows that there was like this handwritten message on it from Henry Gale. And it was basically saying it was a letter or a note to a woman named Jenny. And he's saying, you know, it really is dangerous. You know, doing this balloon trip around the world was really dangerous, blah, 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 blah. And ends up saying, I love you. So then Saeed goes, well, how did Henry Gale write this letter to his wife with a broken neck?
Uh-oh.
Good question. So at this point, Henry starts to panic, or at least the illusion of panic. You can never really tell with him. And he says
that's a good point. You can't tell with him because he is a sneaky fuck.
He is sneaky. He says he didn't kill Henry. And Saeed asks how he knew Henry's wife's name. And then he asks, how many of you are there? Henry pleads that they have no, the original survivors have no idea what he will do.
And right. Saeed, he starts talking about this sort of overarching he, like somebody is in charge, right?
Yeah, there's this leader or whatever. So Saeed asks if he, the leader, is the man with the beard. And immediately you hear in Henry's voice, you hear like almost flabbergasted. He's like, oh no, he's nobody.
He's really good with the way he delivers his lines here.
Yeah, he scoffs at that, like how ridiculous that idea is.
Are you afraid of him?
Absolutely incredulous in his voice when he says that.
Yeah.
At this point, I think Saeed's, he's just had enough. He pulls a fucking gun out. He puts it at Henry's head and says, you have until the count of three. And you find out that he actually means it, because just before he gets to three, Ana Lucia wrestles the gun away as a round goes off.
Yeah, he was going to shoot him.
Yeah. And Ana Lucia sort of twists Saeed around, disarms him. I think at that point, Henry thanks Ana Lucia, and she just says, shut up.
Yeah, she does. It's just like, I didn't save you, Henry, because it was you. I didn't do you a favor. I was just keeping Saeed from murdering somebody.
Actually,
I will say that I don't completely hate Ana Lucia in this particular scene. I don't completely hate her.
Okay.
Just 99% hate her now.
Mm-hmm. She did look fine as hell wrestling that gun away.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those low cut jeans with a little belly there. Oh yeah, me likey.
Yep. Oh god.
Back on the beach, we've got Mr. Echo starting a building project for which he asks help from Charlie. Charlie asks him what he's building, and Echo says nothing. Strong silent type. So back in the jungle, Hurley's walking around with a slipper when he runs across a box of fish crackers just laying there on the ground. He rips open the box.
I love the fishes because they're so delicious.
And in this scene, Hurley totally agrees with you, because he rips open the box and starts shoveling handfuls of crackers into his mouth.
You can't do that. You can't eat a handful of fucking goldfish, because there's not enough saliva to do that. No, you just can't.
Yeah. Yeah. That happens twice in this episode. This is the first one. And as he's trying to gulp down a giant wad of what is at this point probably like cement like box of fish crackers.
Yeah, like eating a bunch of salty crackers.
It is. It just turns into a giant, like, it's like mortar in your mouth. Like, you can't do anything about it. If you try to swallow it, you literally just choke to death.
Yep.
So he sees Dave standing there, just again with that kind of smirk. And Hurley screams with a mouthful of crackers, "You're out here." Dave responds by chucking a coconut directly at him. It hits him, and
crackers fly everywhere. Mortar, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So then Dave takes off. Like, he looks like he's going to throw another one at him, but then he kind of just turns and runs off through the jungle. Hurley once again pursues. And he emerges at the beach where Charlie and Echo are working. So Hurley asks if they saw a guy in a bathrobe and a coconut run by. Charlie says no, in his own smart ass way. Something about rollerblades and a polar bear or some shit. I can't remember.
What he said was, I saw a polar bear on rollerblades with a mango.
Yeah.
Like, God damn it, Charlie.
Charlie, yeah, that's hilarious, Charlie. I'm serious. I'm having a fucking mental breakdown here. And then Echo just says, I did not see anybody. Thanks, Echo. Thanks for the straight answer.
Yeah.
This brings us to flashback number two. still in the mental hospital. I keep saying the insane asylum is what I, it was the first thing that comes into my head. And I'm like, I don't do that. Yeah. Hurley is playing Connect Four with Leonard from the episode Numbers. And he is eating a plate of celery while doing this. Dave is sitting next to him and then is like, dude, what is that? Like, that's not a snack. What do they got you eating? He says, you should steal some of Leonard's graham crackers. He won't notice. So a nurse comes by. I know. A nurse comes by, gives Hurley his meds. And Dave is like, hey, man, don't take that. Hurley's asking him why not. And Dave's like, dude, we're going to escape. You're getting away with me. So then the doctor comes up and asks Hurley and Dave how they are. Dave says, never saner. Which Hurley obviously is entertained by that one because he starts to laugh. And then the doctor asks to take Hurley and Dave's picture because for whatever reason, they've got, a bulletin board of everyone and they don't have their pictures yet.
Which is weird. No, you wouldn't do that. That's fucking weird. But okay.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. It's arts and crafts time. I have no idea what happens during arts and crafts time.
Maybe
I'm sure
it's not
there's
really
people
for
that
do a bulletin board, but he just wants to.
Well, we know why he did it. You know, we find that out at the end. But yeah, the idea of like every patient in the mental hospital being up on some wall and a Polaroid is ridiculous. But
yeah, it's a terrible idea.
In their bathrobes, that's what I'm about to say.
In their bathrobes. Yep,
in their bathrobes.
Seems like a HIPAA violation to me.
Yeah, that's not right.
So when the doctor walks away, Hurley looks over at Dave and then sticks his tongue out and the pills are still sitting there on his tongue. And then Dave is like, oh yeah, welcome to the revolution or something like that. He doesn't sound anything like I just sounded there, by the way.
No.
Okay.
His voice is way too high for that. Back to the present, back on the beach. Sawyer seems to be confounded by trying to twist an Oreo apart.
I'm getting excited just before. I'm like, I love this scene. This might be one of my favorite scenes in the whole show. It's so fucking good. I'm like bursting at the seams right now. Sorry, go ahead.
So, it's so weird though. Like, who doesn't know how to
open an Oreo? Yeah,
you well, yeah, that's dumb.
Yeah, but these aren't Oreos. These are well, what are they called?
Dharma Initiative.
Dharma Initiative
sandwich cookies.
Chocolate sandwich cookies or some shit like that. Yeah, exactly. So they might have different tensile strength. You don't really know, like, especially, you know, the humidity.
Generic Hydrox.
That's it. That's exactly it. I always thought Hydrox, when I heard that, I always thought it sounded like something that somebody would use for like asthma medication or something. Like,
no,
that's a really
that's
weird name for a cookie.
I believe that Hydrox was actually the original chocolate sandwich cookie, and then came the Oreo.
And then Oreo stole it? Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Hydrox.
And everybody like just scandalous. Refers to those cookies as Oreos, whether they're, you know, Oreo brand or name, you know, or store brand.
That's like Kleenex. Kleenex is a brand name, but people will say, does anybody have a Kleenex?
Instead of tissue and Vaseline instead of petroleum.
Right, Vaseline is another
petroleum
one.
Petroleum jelly. Yeah.
KY. Right,
crazy glue.
It says something about your product. If your brand name becomes like the default word for that product, that certainly
I've never even heard of Hydrox cookies, but they were in 1908. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're old. Oreo 1912. So Oreo copied them.
Yep.
Yep.
Hmm.
Yeah. Their rebranding worked though. They came back with hydroxychloroquine and they, took the world by storm.
Duped 100 million people. So
they're like,
God.
Yeah, they're like, you know, you before we gave you diabetes, now we cure you from what was it?
COVID, what was hydroxychloroquine.
No, what was it originally used for, though? Wasn't it anti-malarial?
Yes,
it was anti-malarial. Oh, okay. Yeah. Which makes sense. Yeah. It's antiviral, so, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, we're in a place where we're talking about draining the swamp and then people are using anti-malarials. There's all kinds of symbolism to be mined there. We probably don't want to do it right now, but.
But yet you are.
And, but yet I am. I'm just putting it out there. I'm just throwing just lures out there for people to take.
It's anti-parasite too, but it didn't kill the parasites. So.
Can we please get to the best scene in the show?
Yeah, she's bursting at the
seams. I'm freaking out. Like, why are we talking about hydroxychloroquine. Just fucking move on. Come on.
All of this because Sawyer is a complete fucking moron who can't twist apart a chocolate fucking cookie. That's how we got here.
That's what it is. Blame Sawyer.
Blame it on the fucking rednecks. All right. So while doing this, he breaks the cookie. Hurley walks up. And of course, Hurley's here to give his expert advice on how to fucking eat an Oreo or how to twist apart an Oreo. And Hurley asks Sawyer for something. And Sawyer says that he's got enough stashed to open up a chain of mini marks. And then this was super, super cringe. He asks of Hurley if he thinks Saeed needs a job.
Oh, so bad.
You know what? After just reading this, I finally got it. Because at first I was like, it just went over my head, but now I got it.
Well, because it's not right. He's Iraqi, and the stereotype would be an Indian. I mean, he doesn't even have the stereotype right. He's being a disgusting pig, and he doesn't even have it right. It's just ridiculous. And
if you're talking about Indians, like, there's 1.2 billion people in India. So people from one part of India.
Well, that's why I said the stereotype.
Yeah.
The stereotype, which was furthered by like The Simpsons, right? You had Apu, and that was Apu.
Yeah, I think The Simpsons were first.
Yeah.
Just like the Hydrox cookie was first.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, Sawyer says this disgusting fucking thing.
Yeah. Yeah. With a smirk, but he does it with dimples, so of course. We forgive him. Hurley asks for clonazepam and says that he needs it because he's been seeing things. Sawyer asks him what he's been seeing, and Hurley basically describes Dave. Sawyer and Sawyer points and is like, "Oh, you mean like that guy over there?" Hurley turns. There's no Dave. Turns back around. Sawyer's sitting there grinning, dimples, you know, at the nines. Says, "Gotcha." And this is the point where Hurley finally loses his shit. He fucking linebacker tackles.
Oh my God. He picks Sawyer. Him up. He just grabs him up off the ground.
Picks him up, pile drives him into his own tent. The tarp comes down, and you just see a ruckus. Sawyer tries to, like, you see him try to get out, and then you see him, like, get dragged back in underneath the tarp.
He crawls out from under the tarp and is dragged back like a fucking horror movie. Like, it drags him in there. He's screaming. He's pounding him. Hurley's pounding him, and while he's doing it, he's like, punch, punch,
every
pork
name
chop.
That he called him.
Yes. Yeah. He's punching him, and with every punch comes the nickname. He's like, pork chop, babar, jabba, stay puff, mongo, lardo, beating the bejesus out of him. I'm like, yes, Hurley. Finally, somebody just puts Sawyer in his place, and it beats the shit out of him.
Christmas story kind of moment.
So,
he's just like, I have just had enough of this shit. I could watch that scene where he drags him under that tarp over and over and over and never get tired of it. It's so fucking beautiful.
Hilarious. Yeah.
So while this happens, while the mayor of Island Town exacts his vengeance on one of his citizens, some of his other citizens are sitting there just laughing at this abuse of executive power. Eventually,
Jin and Sun are just cracking up. Everybody's watching. Nobody wants to help. They don't care. They're like, finally, somebody's beating Sawyer's ass. He fucking deserves it.
You've got all the guns. A lot of good that does you right now with a 300-pound guy just wailing the shit out of you. So Jin's laughing, and eventually, I think Sun sort of urges him, like, "Hey, come on, like, fun's over, boys. Let's do something." They pull him off, and Sawyer is just kind of walks away. He's obviously embarrassed as hell, getting the crap beat out of him, and being pile drive through his own house. That was amazing.
Yep.
He walks away telling everybody he's crazy. So next scene, we have Kate giving Sawyer shit about him getting beat up by Hurley, and Sawyer denies any wrongdoing whatsoever and tells Kate that she should stay away from Hurley because he's nuts. Back at his tent, Hurley is packing up a bag when Libby comes up and starts asking him some questions. She notices that he has a huge container of peanut butter in his bag. And Hurley mentions that he's going to live in the caves, because nobody lives there and he won't bother anybody there. And he says something about, like, I'm going to go be one of those hermits that, like, throws poop at people or some shit like that.
Poor Hurley. I don't think he mentions poop throwing. That is so weird that you said that. But
I think he does.
No, he does.
I think
he
says something about throwing crap at people. I think he does, actually. Because I didn't write it down.
I find
down,
it weird
that
nobody's living at the Capes right now. They've all gone back to the beach.
I always found it weird they weren't living in the Caves. I think the Caves is the better spot, but
yeah. They got to go to the Caves anyway to get water.
Well, it's not safe there because Michael's not there to make sure that it's structurally sound. Like if Michael comes back, then everyone will move back to the Caves.
Yeah, good point.
Anywho, I just had to say that because I haven't gotten many of those from you today. Hurley says that that Libby can't help him and that nobody can help him. So now he's walking to the Caves and his bag or backpack, whatever, rips open and all the food falls out. And the giant tub of peanut butter falls out and I guess it breaks open. And Hurley picks up the
crappy Dharma initiative packaging.
Yeah.
Very bad.
Seriously. It's like it fell on a bush and shattered the plastic somehow. Like, okay.
Yeah, seriously. If it's that type of plastic, then I cannot imagine how much microplastic he's taking in by eating this.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
He goes through it and he picks up a leaf and the leaf is just covered in gooey peanut butter. And he just starts shoveling it into his mouth. Once again, how do you do this without choking? I don't know. Maybe he's good at it. Maybe he does this a lot and he's got his own techniques, like people who can eat hot dogs five at a time.
Anywho. Oh, sure. Yeah. You mean like people with eating contests?
Yeah. Well, it's the same type of thing, like people that can take an entire beer down in like two gulps. Like I've tried it.
Oh, I could probably do that.
And you can do it. We saw people do it at like Oktoberfest. We saw that 90-pound girl take down those entire steins. It was like, holy Jesus.
Yeah, she drank like a liter of beer in
7 seconds or something. It was ridiculous.
No gag reflex. That's
none.
Good.
No. That's
good. But yeah, I feel like if you're going to be in an eating competition, it's not going to be goldfish crackers and peanut butter because that's just not how the mouth works. Like you cannot eat those things quickly.
You need food that has natural like juices that don't, so you don't have to eat.
Well, like the hot dogs, you know, they drink water as they go. Yeah.
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 They do.
But yeah, a hot dog you can get in a couple bites for sure. It's not going to stick to the roof of your mouth like peanut butter.
Well, they eat the bun too, though. That's the thing.
I guess you have to eat the bun with it.
Yeah.
The idea of eating hot dogs at top speed, like as fast as I can and as much as I can, makes me sick. I don't know how people do that. That's disgusting.
It's definitely a sign of excess that I've always found somewhat.
But the
disturbing.
Guys are always skinny. The guys and girls that do it are super skinny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't think you're doing it every day. Yeah. How do you practice for that, though? I mean, I guess you have to.
They do train.
They do. They do something to expand their stomach. I don't know if they drink a lot of liquid to expand it or what, but they do something.
Well, the stomach has this is so weird that this is coming up because I'm literally in my biology, my anatomy and physiology class, we're doing the digestive system right now. And I learned yesterday the stomach has the ability to expand to hold 2 liters. So like a jug of soda. And that's as far as it can go. And it will bounce back. Yeah, that's a lot. Hmm. I mean, just the idea of eating like a half gallon of hot dogs makes me... let's move on. I can't even think about it. That's disgusting.
Especially like saying a half gallon as a unit of measurement for hot dogs. Like that right there.
Yeah.
Like I'm already... That's gross.
A half gallon of hot
dogs. Just calling
it
a half gallon. Yeah. A desk of cheese.
Yeah.
So, anywho, yeah, he's sitting there eating a bunch of, or shoveling peanut butter into his mouth using a leaf, and he hears footsteps behind him, and once again, hey, it's Dave smirking, standing over him, and Hurley's like, dude, you can't be here. Dave says, sorry, dude, I'm here. Which takes us to flashback 3, back in the mental hospital, Hurley is talking with Dr. Brooks. That's the name of the doctor. I think we learned that earlier, but I forgot to say that.
No, you didn't. You said Brooks earlier. Don't remember.
Okay.
Yeah, you did.
I don't remember. That's why I'm drinking a screwdriver at 10:30 in the morning.
About to say. Yeah. The orange juice. That
was it. I needed my vitamin C. I'm very, very, very important to your health. So the
Holy
doctor asks
fuck.
Hurley.
Move on.
I was moving on, but now I'm going to wait just because you were so rude. Oh, yeah. The doctor asks Hurley if he's comfortable with his weight. Hurley gets a bit choked up and says that if he wasn't so fat, those people would not have died.
This is heartbreaking.
The doctor says, the doctor starts to go through this the accident that they referenced earlier. And he says, the doctor says there were 23 people on a deck that was built for 8. And the deck collapsed and 2 people died. And he says that after that happened, Hurley stopped sleeping. He stopped going out, but he never stopped eating because eating is how he punishes himself. And I'm laughing right now because when I wrote this on the outline, I said it punches himself.
The outline says it does say it. Yeah, he punches, just himself. Punches himself.
I'm gonna eat and punch myself.
Eating and punching. I mean, this scene is heartbreaking for me. And I understand that. Like, I have trouble when I stress eat as well, and I get like addicted to carbs. Ben's seen me do it where I just, if I'm really, really stressed out, I will make a box of spaghetti and a loaf of garlic bread and eat it all, and then hate myself afterward. Yeah. And then
why do I feel so bloated?
You can go run a marathon then.
Fuck that. So I feel for him. I understand the urge to turn to food for comfort, and that can be a tough place to be. You know, it's different. Like, I've been addicted to other drugs. Like, I, you know, had to go to rehab for crystal meth when I was in my 20s, right before I went into the mental hospital. Surprise. But when you have addictions to food, it's kind of like, I think we've gone into this back when we had Dave and Ado on. I think we talked about being, you know, the difference of being addicted to cigarettes as opposed to something quote unquote illicit, you know, and that's the same thing with food. It's like you have to eat to live and to sometimes be able to draw that line between unhealthy eating and healthy eating, that line can be blurry and it can be tough. And I know what that is like, to just eat and eat and eat and hate yourself for eating. And it's tough. It's just sad. And it's sad, like, the way that, you know, they wrote this in, that everything is wrapped up into the idea that he was responsible for these people's deaths because of his weight, when we know, you know, the deck wasn't built that way, but it's just all wrapped up in his head. And so we, like Ben says, he punches himself.
Well, we actually don't know about the deck. Michael could have told us about the
obviously wasn't, well, it was structurally sound.
No, because the doctor said it was built for eight, and there were 23 people on it. Like, it would have fallen anyway. He, you know, Hurley was just the last straw, but the difference is, like, if someone very thin walked out and was the last straw, they weren't going to blame themselves the way that Hurley blamed himself. Sure. And, you know, and then he gets into that cycle where he's just going to make it worse by continuing.
You
to
know,
eat.
If Michael had just been at the party, though, he would have been able to take one look at the deck and go, no, off, man.
No more. No, dude.
Yeah.
Dude.
So when the doctor tells him that, you know, he kept eating and that's how he punishes himself, Hurley starts to recoil a bit and he starts channeling Dave, and he says, you know, Dave's, you're basically a quack, and that Dave is right. So then the doctor's like, well, okay, I got something to show you. This is going to be painful, but I need to show it to you. He says, he grabs the picture, and this is the Polaroid that he had taken of Dave and Hurley when they were playing Connect Four earlier. He shows him the picture, and there's no Dave. It's just Hurley sitting there in a chair with his arm around nobody.
Oh,
and Dr. Brooks says, Dave does not exist.
That's tough. That's tough to hear.
So later, Hurley is asleep and Dave starts prodding him to wake up. Hurley says, man, you're a hallucination. Dave slaps him and he's like, well, maybe I just thought that you slapped me. Dave slaps him again and says, man, we can do this all night if you want to. So So Hurley's like, well, you know, the doctor showed me this picture and you weren't in it. And Dave starts going up. He's like, man, what? Photoshop, Kinko's? I mean, they didn't really blow up the Death Star. And Hurley seems to actually buy that one. Yeah. So as they're making their escape, Dave points to a plate of uneaten food, of leftover lasagna that somebody didn't eat on their way out. So Hurley picks it up, and while they're making their escape, he's eating lasagna with his hands off a plate.
This is so ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's like heartbreaking, and I get, you know, I mean, it's kind of funny watching him do that, but like at the same time, all I can think is just like how sad that is, that he's compulsed to eat lasagna on the run. Like, it's just, breaks my heart.
It is, but now from somebody else in cold.
I'm also thinking about making lasagna next week.
I mean, yeah, I make a good lasagna too.
Dude, cold lasagna is the fucking best. Now, I generally like it after it's been cooked and then you cool it and you eat it afterward. I don't know if I'm just sitting there on a plate getting...
No, lasagna is always better. Yeah, always better the second day too, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So as they come to some window and Dave grabs keys or tells Hurley to grab the keys out of his pocket. And I couldn't remember here if Hurley remembered taking those keys or if this is something that was like a Tyler Durden thing where like Dave took him over while he was asleep and stole the keys.
They show the keys on the doctor's desk when he grabs the picture. You can see the keys there. So
I think it's implied he snatched them then. Yeah, I think it's implied he snatched them then. No, they don't ever really make Dave as like another personality that would take over his brain. He's more of just a hallucination, I think.
Yeah. So they open up the window and Dave jumps out and starts talking about, oh, the sweet taste of freedom or whatever. He's like, you know what tastes better than freedom? Cheeseburgers. Again, he starts tempting him with food. And then Hurley tells Dave that he's not escaping and that Dave really just doesn't want him to change, wants him to eat himself to death. And then he locks Dave out. Come back to the present. Dave is still standing there over Hurley. Hurley closes his eyes multiple times like he's a kid. Like if, you know, I squint my eyes really really hard and when I open them back up, you're not going to be there. And each time he does it, Dave's still there. And then Dave starts to get pissed off at Hurley that he got peanut butter on his slipper. And then Dave sort of, you know, kind of softens a little bit. He's like, this whole thing, you know, this is going to get better, but it's going to get worse before it gets better. And then he tries to lay it all out to Hurley. He says, Hurley, you never left the hospital. When you shut that window on me that night at the mental hospital, you blew a gasket. And now you're basically living in your own private Idaho, which actually looked that term up. It's an interesting term. But basically like you're in a coma and you're in a you're in a delusional state in a coma in this place. Hurley tells him, he's like, but I won the lottery, and starts to tell him about all the other things that have happened since he left the hospital. And Dave points out that he's like, well, which numbers did you use for the lottery? And it was the Leonard's numbers. And he's also like, you know, and also the code for the doom button, all that stuff, all the same numbers. And then he asks him, he's like, well, all these other things aside, if you left the place and you're on this island, why have you been here for 2 months and you haven't lost any weight?
Because he had a private stash of food.
Yeah. Hello.
That's true. Which he would not shrink from eating handfuls of at a time, as we can see. And then the real kicker, he says, and what about Libby? Why would a really, really cute girl like that go after you?
Mm. Ouch.
Ouch. Mm. Yeah.
That's mean.
That is mean. So now Dave and Hurley are walking through the jungle, and Dave explains that he's just he was real. He was somebody that was real in real life, but right now he's just a part of Hurley's subconscious. And that he's the part that wants Hurley to wake up. So he does this, a very sort of vanilla Sky moment where he walks him to the edge of the cliffs. And he's like, you know, I want you to wake up, man. I want you to come back to reality. If you do that, if you jump off this cliff, you're coming back to reality. Hurley is a little bit scared, but Dave ends up saying like, you know, this is the only way out. And he's like, you know, I'll see you in another life, buddy. Jumps. You see him,
which is like a Desmond line, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll see you in another life, brother.
See you in another life, brother.
See you in another life, brother.
Yeah.
So back in the hatch, Anna Lucia is cleaning her pistol, and Locke enters on crutches, and he asks her for 5 minutes to talk with Henry. She's kind of like, "Well, I don't think so," and he says, "Well, I'm not really asking. I don't really need your permission to do this." Then he realizes he actually kind of does, and says, "I just need 5 minutes to talk with him. I deserve that." When he goes in, he asks Henry, "Like, what do I call you? It's not your name." Henry just says, "Just call me Henry. I'm used to it at this point." Locke asks him if he got caught on purpose. And he says, "You and your people have been on this island for God knows how long." And Henry sort of interjects and he says, "God doesn't know how long we've been here. He can't see the island any better than the rest of the world."
Excuse me?
What? That seems really important.
Excuse me? Yeah.
Really
what?
Cool.
Wait.
The rest of the world? What?
What?
Yeah. So Henry asks Locke why he would put himself through all of this. Were they trying to find this place? And Henry says that this place is a joke. And then he starts to kind of lay it all out. He says that when John was pinned under the door, he never entered the code when he went into the computer. He saw the hieroglyphs. He heard the machinery rev up, but nothing happened. He saw, after all that happened, the time just flipped back to 108. He says he never actually entered the numbers. He never pressed the button. Locke accuses him of lying, and Henry says, "I'm done lying."
I doubt that very highly.
I doubt that.
What kind of fucking mind game is he playing with Locke right now?
Yeah.
But there are also a lot of mind games that the writers are playing with the viewers right now.
Like, of course.
You know,
yeah,
what if this is really the truth? What if Henry didn't put in the numbers? What if it's really the truth that God can't see the island? What if it's really the truth that Hurley is making all of this up in his head and he's in a coma, you know, back at, what was it, Santa Rosa? So there are so many ways they're fucking with everybody in this episode. It's really, really brilliant.
This episode really personally fucked with me when it came out, because I committed myself to the mental hospital in, I think it was 2004, actually. It was 2004, 2005. It was right around the time that this episode actually came out. And, I was going through all kinds of stuff. And I remember I called you, Christy, from the mental hospital. Do you remember
that? Right. It was that fall, too.
And I called from a payphone, because that was all you could use in the hospital were payphones. And I called Christy Collect from the mental hospital. And it's
were
so
you
funny,
asking her to bring you a robe?
No, but I was just telling her I was there. Like I was in the hospital, and the two people that I called were my mother and Christy. But do you remember what I said to you? This is stuck in my brain when I was trying.
I was supposed to come and visit you shortly after that. And you were like, so I'm crazy. Are you still going to come and visit me? And I was like, well, I knew that, now you just on paper.
And so that's actually what I said. I didn't know how to tell her. Cause I committed myself to a mental hospital. Clearly I'm okay talking about it now, but in the moment it was kind of embarrassing. Cause how the fuck did I end up here? Right. How is this happening in my life? So this episode was out just shortly after all I had gone through all of this, and the idea, that this was all in his head and he was experiencing these delusions. Like I checked myself in the hospital because I was going through mania, and I was undiagnosed bipolar disorder at the time. And so I had that stuff where I was delusional. I was confused as to what was going, what reality was. And so when I was trying to put myself and my mental health back together, and then I watched this episode, it really threw me for a loop. The idea that that you could be that crazy, I guess, I should say. Anywho's.
Back on the cliff where Hurley is and where he just watched Dave jump into the surf, Libby shows up and says that he's like, well, how did you know I was here? Nope, I didn't tell you I was going to be here. And she says, well, that Jin Jin saw him, and then he's like, ha, he doesn't speak English. How did he tell you? And she's like, he told Sun, and Sun told me. So Hurley tells Libby that she's just a figment of his imagination, and that he's not scared anymore, and that he starts inching towards the cliff's edge. Like, he's going to jump. And he tells her that none of this is happening, and that no girl like her would ever like him. Mm. I'm just going to say, Starla liked you. She was hot.
Yeah, so,
I know. Yeah. That's the
there's
thing.
There's a precedent here, buddy.
Poor yep. Hurley. I mean, there's somebody for everyone. And like, it's just so sad. It's just so sad that he sees himself that way. But, you know, I understand it, I guess.
There we go.
That is tough. Yep. And Libby does like him. And it's very sweet. Anyways, this episode's making me sad.
So, yeah, Hurley says, I just made you up. But Libby asks Hurley then, is like, well, then what was the name of the broken, of the man with the broken leg that Echo brought back when we were crashing on the other side of the island? And he's like, I have no idea. I didn't know him. And she's like, that's right, because that happened to me. Those things were real. You didn't make me up. And she's like, to say that is insulting. And then Hurley asks if he was holding a slipper earlier when she saw him on the beach after he first saw Dave. And she says, no, I don't remember that. And then she looks him in the eyes and says, I am real. And the way I feel about you is real. And then they kiss. And she says, and that was real.
It's so great. I love it.
And then Hurley says, well, I want to be sure that was real, and asks to kiss her one more time.
Even when he's panicking, he's still sly a little bit Mr. Mayor.
Yeah.
I have written right here in my notes, I've felt this crazy before. It's scary. It really is. Like, people who don't deal with mental illness and don't understand what it's like to doubt reality. It's terrifying. It's fucking terrifying. And this episode is triggering for me even now. Yeah.
My ex had her older brother, really, really nice guy, but he was severe bipolar. And there's a couple times where he went off of his meds. And there was one in particular where I remember running into him and I was like, I knew it was him. I mean, like, I could, from his face, from his body, I was like, this is him, but it was not him. Like,
yeah.
And this was something where, like, 3 weeks later, he ended up 300 miles away in a rental car, like, just completely random shit that he ended up doing while he was in that state. So, yeah, my experience with somebody that was like that. I mean, other than obviously you and I are together and you've had mental problems in the past.
You haven't seen me that bad. You exactly. haven't seen me,
off the reservation.
Yeah. I mean, I was afraid of myself. I went to the emergency room and I walked in, and when they asked me why I was there, I said, I need to be locked up. I'm afraid of what I might do next. And I ended up in a mental hospital because I was just terrified of myself. I just didn't know what was happening. I didn't know what was real. It was very scary. And I'm just glad I had the wherewithal to go to the hospital instead of doing something completely fucking psychotic. I don't know. I guess I'll call it luck. I don't know, honestly. But
I don't think it was luck. I think it was you made the right decision. Period.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I guess I was scared enough of myself.
You really committed to your mental health. So it's back scary. To it.
Well, I just want to say, I mean, to anybody listening to this, you know, if you have trouble, if you feel that way, if you're scared of yourself, go to the hospital. And it's embarrassing. I remember, you know, I can remember standing in the emergency room and I could barely get the words out when they asked me why I was there. And I was just sobbing. And I mean, it's really fucking embarrassing to have to say to somebody, you know, I don't trust myself. I'm afraid of myself. Like, it's humbling. It's a humbling experience. But, you know, if you need help, go get it. It's out there.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Back to the cliff's edge.
I mean, anywho.
Anyways. Hurley and Libby start to walk away from the cliff's edge. And Hurley asks her if she thinks things can really change. She says, yeah, I do. But I notice here when they show her, like, her expression is just a little off. when she says that. Mm-hmm. And if you watch the just watch it, her expression is a little bit off, and it echoes. It sort of echoes the next scene. So we go into it. We end the episode with a flashback where they go back to the scene where Dr. Brooks is taking the picture of Hurley and Dave playing Connect Four or whatever, except we're seeing it from a different perspective. And this time we see it and we get like these strings start to go all dissonant. The music gets all sort of like unsettling. And as the camera pans around, you see a woman's head and a woman, a nurse says, "Here's your pill, Libby." And the camera continues to pan and you see right there in the mental ward, or sorry, in the hospital, Libby,
are you looking fucking
loopy as
me?
Hell? And
brunette as black. Well.
Brunette, yep.
Are you kidding me?
What the fuck?
Lost.
That's two badass episode endings in a row.
Yes, agreed.
Yep. Big time.
All right. Fun facts today. We're going to talk
about mental institutions.
Gonna be about
ranch. We're
going to
talk about hallucinations. There are five types of hallucinations: visual, olfactory, gustatory, auditory, and tactile. Visual's fairly obvious.
Is that like when you just see giant flocks of birds that aren't there?
Gustatory?
No, it's not spelled like goose, like the animals.
G-U-S-T-A. Sure,
pretty much.
Oh my god!
I'm pretty sure I understood that.
I know you understand, for fuck's sake. All right, so visual hallucinations are by far the most common type of hallucination. And olfactory means smell. Obviously. Gustatory refers to your sense of taste. Sometimes your hallucinations can be those of taste. It is most common symptom for epilepsy. Where you taste things you're not supposed to. Yeah. Auditory, I'm sorry, I said visual were the most common. I didn't mean that. I apologize. Auditory hallucinations are by far the most common. Yeah, so auditory hallucinations can manifest in several ways. If you are schizophrenic or bipolar, this can also happen where you can hear actual voices, people saying things.
I was just thinking the same thing.
But they can also be something like you hear clicking sounds, or you hear like annoying sounds that kind of just won't go away, which can also happen. Tactile hallucinations. Tactile is our sense of touch, of course. And these tactile hallucinations, like, they manifest in ways of like feeling like there are bugs crawling on your skin, or that your internal organs are moving around. Things like that can happen. And that's obviously, I mean, you're having some pretty serious issues.
Well, you got a high fiber diet. That does happen.
Oh, God. All right. So what causes hallucinations? We're going to talk about a few other things that can do that. So obviously, mental illness is the most common cause for hallucinations. Mental illnesses like schizophrenia, dementia, delirium, schizoaffective disorder, and bipolar disorder. I can say that I experienced auditory hallucinations when I was manic. It revolved around paranoia for me. I always thought that I could hear people whispering and talking, saying bad things, derogatory things about me. And that's terrifying, just FYI. So there is a difference between a hallucination and a delusion, though, which is very interesting. It's a subtle difference. Hallucinations always revolve around the senses, right? So it's going to be the visual, olfactory, gustatory, auditory, tactile. Mm-hmm. A delusion centers on what you believe. So if you're saying, like, if you're feeling something, it's a hallucination. But if you believe that you are feeling bugs on your skin because you are haunted by ghosts, then that's the delusion part of it. You understand?
Or you believe that Trump won in 20 last year.
That's a mass delusion. Yes. So, as far as Hurley's hallucination, I find that sort of hard to believe, that he was manifesting this entire human over that accident. That doesn't seem to track, but, you know, it was good for the show, I guess.
Plus, so. How did he throw the coconut at him and spit out all the goldfish?
Well, that was the island, right? I guess the island doing that. You know, it's also got Christian Shepherd walking around, and he's dead.
Yeah, seriously.
So,
It was actually.
All right, so that's hallucinations, and definitely just aired all my dirty laundry. And well, fuck it. I guess I've said all kinds of shit on this podcast by now.
All your dirty bathrobes.
Surprise! Yeah.
You're normalizing the conversation.
So, what did you wear in the mental hospital? Just regular clothes? They just let you bring your regular clothes, or
no? We had hospital like clothes on. You were a patient.
The open back ones.
Yeah. Well, no. Just like scrubs, essentially.
Oh, okay.
Is basically like they gave you like scrub pajamas and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was there for a week. I was there for a week, and I begged to stay longer. I didn't want to go home. I really didn't.
They basically said, you're okay. You just leave, gave you some meds, and
I was officially diagnosed with bipolar disorder.
Oh, okay.
And I was put on medication, at the time. And so once you had it.
I knew someone for 19 years that had that and never took meds because she was afraid of them.
Well,
it was rough.
So it's been a long... It's been a long road. I'm on a combination of medications now that are pretty effective. But I have been through several combinations where it's hard to explain that when you take a mood stabilizer, it keeps you from entering mania or depression, but it also keeps you from really experiencing very like highs, the normal highs and lows. So you feel very muted. And so it's easy
to... You're pretty much like monotone or whatever.
Yeah, yep. And a lot of mood stabilizers are pretty awful that way. They make you feel bad. So muted. It's hard to explain.
I had been taking mood stabilizers for a little over a year, and I came off them recently. And it's definitely, that was the way I kind of felt like it was like, wow. Once when I came off of them, I was like, I don't know. I'm not saying the colors are brighter or anything like that, but definitely I'd feel my normal sort of reactions and things like that. I'd feel my highs go higher, my lows would go a little bit lower. But all in
I'm
all,
in the
like
process
coming off of them,
right now of
really
sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I'm done. I'm done.
I'm in the process right now of switching from Wellbutrin to Zoloft.
Mm-hmm.
So,
those are both antidepressants. They're not mood stabilizers, but it's Well, antidepressants can make you feel pretty shitty too.
Yeah.
So the difference is the difference with a mood stabilizer. So with an antidepressant, how do I explain this? Okay, so imagine a bell curve.
Antidepressants don't really work.
Well, it depends. It's a very controversial topic. But imagine picture a bell curve. Everyone knows what a bell curve is like, right? Uh-huh. So then put a line at the top of the bell and put a line at the bottom of the bell. And so you're looking at a chart, essentially, where there's a line at the top, line at the bottom, and a bell curve. So normal emotions you'll go up and down like that bell curve. Well, when you're a depressed person, what happens is that bottom end just keeps going. It just keeps going down. It goes past the line.
There you go, several standard deviations down.
Yes, okay. And it just keeps going down. So what an antidepressant will do is lift you back up into that normal range. You're back in your normal emotions. You're between those two lines. A mood stabilizer is a little bit more because what it can do is prevent you from going up and above the line. So what happened to me
Which is
manic, right. So what happened to me, I was misdiagnosed as a depressive in my late teens because I happened to be going through a depressive part of my mental illness, and I was put on an antidepressant. Well, what happens to you when you are bipolar and you take an antidepressant is that antidepressant, it starts to lift you back up and it lifts you back up and you get into the normal range and then you just keep going up and then you keep going up and then you keep going up because there's no ceiling, there's no cap to the antidepressant. And so it shoots you off. And I started taking the antidepressants when I was about 19. And I was 24 when I ended up in the mental hospital. So that shows you how long it took for me to be catapulted into psychotic mania. And so a mood stabilizer, what it does is it puts a cap on the bottom like an antidepressant would, and it puts a cap on the top so you don't slip into depression, you don't slip into mania, but it also, it makes that area where your normal emotion range would be, it kind of squeezes it. So you don't get as excited and you don't get as sad and you just sort of feel kind of stuck in this range. And it's a trade-off because it's like, do I want to go completely crazy and be manic? Do I want to get depressed and kill myself? Or do I want to be as normal as possible? Which is the unfortunate thing with mental illness is you're never really okay. You just get as normal as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways.
I take blood pressure and cholesterol medicine.
Good. Blood pressure medicine. I hope it keeps you alive.
Yes.
All right. So let's do some best and worst moments. How about we start with Derek? What were you thinking?
Well, the best moment was when Hurley jumps on Sawyer and basically beats his ass and repeating back all the names that he called him. That was a great scene. Like you said, it so really far, was. It's one of the best scenes that I've seen in the series.
Absolutely. Yeah. Perfect scene.
And the worst moment was Hurley on the cliff. I just didn't, you know, contemplating going through all of what he was going through.
Yeah, it was tough. That should have been my worst moment, but I got really hung up at the ranch all over the jungle, and I ran down. I just can't get past that. Yeah. And then my best moment, obviously, it's one of the best moments of the show, is when he's dragging, Hurley is dragging Sawyer back under that tarp. But a very close second of the reveal at the end, like Libby's like, what? That's such a great moment. Christy, what about you?
Best moment. I'd like that whole like paragraph of Libby and Hurley up on the cliff and they kiss. That's beautiful. Strong second was Hurley attacking Sawyer. And my worst moment was Hurley seeing the palette of food. He just was crushed.
Just defeated.
Yeah, it's like, I destroyed all his food.
I just got this whole palette to destroy now.
Yeah, it was just crushing.
Yeah. Ben, what about you?
My favorite moment, I mean, other than Hurley tackling Sawyer and beating him up, was when Dr. Whatever revealed that Dave was not real.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a tough moment. And that's actually very dangerous. That's very risky to confront someone with their delusion. That's a sensitive topic.
Yeah. My worst moment, two worst moments, both surrounding food. One was when he was wasting all of the food. I get it, but you know, kind of stupid execution. And then the other one was like the two scenes where he's like cramming his face with fish crackers or shoveling peanut butter into his mouth. Like I get it. He has an issue with food, but that's the sort of a trope that I think is a little played out. I think it's way to me. It would have been a way better scene if with the peanut butter he's looking at it. And all you could do that entire scene with just his face. He never actually has to act on it to know that he's struggling with it.
Anyways, I'm going to start with my character rankings. My best character was Libby. I think she was great the way that she handled Hurley and especially at the end when she's like talking him from this delusion. I thought she was great. My second best is Hurley. I think that he was putting the work in to get better, and that is a hard thing to do. And then I had Saeed as my third character because he was able to interrogate someone without torturing them. And so I did like that.
Just almost kills him.
Almost blew his head off.
At least he didn't torture.
But he didn't torture.
It's and character that's, growth.
That's what I'm saying. That's his
Skip
battle.
Skip the torture and shoot him.
Yeah. I really struggled. I have no one in my worst characters. I couldn't. It was just one of those episodes where, you know, people were either neutral or I loved their performance. I am going to fuck the mayor of Island Town. That ass beating he gave Sawyer got me hot as fuck. So it's me and Hurley. And since there were no bad characters, I am killing Mr. Randy Douchebag Nation.
We're actually gonna lose perspective on who's actually in any of these fucking seasons if we just keep bringing Randy's douche bag in.
That's my podcast. I can do what I want. Christine, what were your character rankings?
My top three were the same as yours: Libby, Hurley, really? Slade.
All right.
Mm-hmm. I did choose bottom three though: Dave, Sawyer, and just to round it out nicely, Anna Lucia.
It's like she's your Randy. Just right. Throwing her in there.
She is rounded out nicely.
Yeah, she is.
Damn.
I'm gonna kill Dave, and I'm gonna fuck Libby, but Lily. I'm gonna fuck Libby, but Libby on the island, not Libby.
All right, Libby on the island. Derek, what about you?
My best was Hurley. I like that he, you know, kind of snapped out of it or whatever. I liked Litz. Second best was Libby for helping him. Third best was Dave. I just kind of thought he was funny, you know, just. Shit he did on the island. My worst was Henry Gale, because I just don't like him.
You hate and Henry.
I do. I mean, I guess I have like the Anna thing with Christy. My second worst was Sawyer, just because he got what he deserved. Then I'm gonna fuck Anna Lucia and not gonna kill anybody this episode.
Oh, Randy Nobody escapes killable. Punishment. Ben, give us your rankings and then update us on where we stand, please.
Yeah, I had Hurley in first place for obvious reasons. I had Dave in second place because I like Evan Handler, the actor. I thought he did this role really, really well.
It was great.
He was funny and sort of I don't know what's the word, like a sprite. Like he was really just sort of. Just up to no good, just mischievous.
Yeah, that's what I liked about him.
Yeah.
And then Libby
I feel like
in third.
The points for Dave should go to Hurley, though, because like it was him. Right?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
Dave was a separate individual or actor.
Yeah, he's a separate actor. Exactly.
All right, fine. Okay, fine.
I only had one worse, and it was Sawyer. His whole, like, well, I didn't do shit to him. I was like, really? Fuckhead? Are you serious? Like, you're sitting here beating this guy down constantly. He checks you once, and you're sitting there playing, you know, crying foul. Fuck
well,
you,
that's what a bully does. Hick. That's what it's like. You know, if you fight back, then they cry. That's what it's always like.
Yep.
Yeah. Fucking dimples. I'm going to have this because I didn't kill anyone in this episode, but those energies have to go somewhere. So I'm gonna have a really, really hot fuck with both Kate and Anna Lucia. Just for I don't even know if Kate wasn't even hardly in this episode, but
that's fine.
Yeah,
I think she was,
neither was
she
Randy.
yeah.
All right, where do we stand? Any movement in the Rankins?
Yes, actually, we have quite a bit in the top three movement this time. Echo still in first place with 114, but again, he hasn't moved in like I think he got all that stuff in the first like handful of episodes, and he's been just
kind of plateaued.
It's
been 114 for weeks. Yeah,
yeah. We have Locke has given up second place to Hurley. Hurley has jumped into out from not even in the bottom three to number two, the mayor of
Here
Island Town.
Comes we, Mayor. Hurley, all you got to do is beat ass and the rankings.
Exactly.
Right.
So
I think
now
that's how Echo got in the front too, is we all loved his murderous rampage.
Yeah. So Locke has relinquished second place to Hurley, but now Locke and Kate are tied for third place with 62 points. And again, I think Dr. Bronze is no longer in the top three. He's somewhere hanging back there, but. Always dangerous. And then the bottom three, not a whole lot of surprises. We still have Charlie from his baby napping, Mr. Cooper in second place, and thanks to Lacey keeping Randy Douchebag Nations relevant.
He's not getting away.
No.
Fuck Randy. All right, let's do some final impressions. How about Ben? You start.
Yeah, this was a great episode. Again, I love Evan Handler. Every time I see him, all I can think of is wrong call. So,
oh my God, watch Californication. Just watch
Californication.
It's so good.
And I liked, you know, again, the whole sort of delusion thing of like this person being like this fully formed, almost like sentient delusion. yeah, a little
very,
bit of a
very uncommon, very uncommon.
Yeah, yeah. But I appreciate the way that they did it, and it was just a fun episode. Sure. And it was, you know, watching Hurley struggle with his demons and literally like his demons kind of coming with him to the island, and then them sort of casting a doubt at the end of whether or not any of this is even real. It was a lot of good mind fuckery. So I agree a lot with Christy there that they're pulling out a lot of stops right now, and it made it a really entertaining episode.
Yeah. I love this episode. It's very triggering for me. I do have issues a lot of times in the way that mental illness is portrayed in Hollywood. You know, people who are having a mental break are often villainized. And even, you know, we talk about it all the time. My favorite show, Criminal Minds, one of mine, but they are very guilty of that, where, you know, it's very easy to just write a quote unquote crazy person as the villain. I thought that this episode, although it's highly unlikely to have a delusion such as Dave, where it would be, you know, a whole like manifesting human that you interact with that way. That part is a little bit far-fetched, but I thought that they treated Hurley's issues with respect, and I liked that. So it makes me like that episode. Although, like I said, the first time I saw it, it really fucked with me because I have been in that mental space where you're not sure what is real, and that is really scary. As far as like the plot and moving the plot forward, there was something that we didn't really talk about in the episode, but I do want to point out, like, who is Henry afraid of? Because this is the first episode where he starts talking about he, right? Oh, he's going to do this or he's going to do that. And Henry appears to be frightened by that idea. Now, does anything Henry say mean anything? Mm-hmm. I guess we don't really know about that right now. But it piques my interest. It's like, wait a second. Like, is there this overarching villain that we don't even know about yet?
Oh, yeah. We didn't even talk about that.
Right. That's like, who is he? And so I'm he left at Negan. The end of the he is Negan. Whoa. All right. So for me, I love the episode, and I'm always looking for the sort of what's next. You know, last week it was like, oh my God, there's this map on the blast door. And this week it's wait, who the fuck is Henry afraid of? Yeah, overall, great episode. Loved it. It was a Hurley episode, so obviously it was going to be good. Christy, what were your final impressions?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what all of you said. It's a Hurley episode, so of course I enjoyed it. I liked getting more of his backstory, and I do like that there were discussions about mental health issues, not only in that show, but on the podcast. I am a little bit disappointed that none of you seemed to get my Overboard reference. But, you know, I'll get over that. So
you made an Overboard reference?
Uh-huh.
I don't even hear you say it. Oh, that's such a gem of a film.
I said that I wanted to fuck Libby, but Libby on the island, not
the
All right. Well, 10 minutes later, I got it. Oh my gosh.
I don't think I don't know if I've ever seen that movie.
Oh my God.
I don't think I have either.
It's a guilty pleasure.
I mean,
it's not that what you said wasn't funny. I just literally didn't get the reference.
Oh, okay.
I heard you say it. So it was like, blah, blah, blah. That's what you said. And I was like,
yeah,
I'm sure somebody will get that.
Doing what Libby was doing.
I wasn't going to call you out at the time. I was like, what the hell are you talking about? I figured the listeners at the point would be like, haha, I know I've seen that
movie. And the original Overboard with Goldie Hawn and
Kurt Russell is the shit.
And I haven't even seen the new one, but I think
they remade
the new one
it. No, I don't want to talk about it. That's terrible. Okay. That's a stupid idea. Don't remake that movie. Goldie Hawn, Kurt Russell. It's a fucking brilliant, you know,
it's all
80s
on a wire.
Movie.
No, that was Mel Gibson, and he's in a job of a whole other fucking level.
Okay.
All right. We apologize, Christy. We missed your Overboard reference. We'll try to do better next time. All right. Derek, what'd you think of episode 18, Dave, and what kind of questions did you have other than why is Libby in a mental hospital?
Yeah, that was my primary question. I like this episode. It was a crazy episode about Hurley hallucinating basically an entire person to deal with his trauma of the accident.
Yeah.
And but Libby comes and really helps him deal with the problems on the island and basically saves him. So other than why, the biggest question other than her being in the mental hospital is if the bearded man is not the leader, who is the real leader of the others?
Okay. Ooh. See, so Derek picked up on it. Yeah. Who is he? Very interesting question that will be answered alone. Maybe it's a collective. I noticed
that Henry was really scared too. Like he was terrified of this person.
It does appear that way,
doesn't
it? Or
maybe he's just making that up.
And we also assume that they have a hierarchical command structure. I mean, they could be a collective, they could be a hive mind. These things, you know, we're already like trying to like paint this into a corner, just given our own prejudices. So let's just keep it a little more open minded about this.
Do you think the others are, what are they, are communists or something? I thought they were Scientologists. There's definitely
a hierarchy. As long as they're clear. Yeah, they're clear.
That's who he is. It's Tom Cruise.
It's Tom Cruise.
Jumping on a couch.
You can't catch me, gay thoughts.
Whoops. Ben got a Family Guy reference in there at the end. All right, guys. Last week, I said that I had a little announcement this week, and I'm just going to tease you until next week. But 2 weeks from now, we're going to have another special guest on our episode. And I'm not going to tell you who yet. You're going to have to turn in next week to find out, and 2 weeks to hear them. Next week is Lost Season 2, Episode 19, SOS. We get Rose and Bernard's backstory.
Oh my God.
And I'm going to do it. It's a Lacey episode. It's a Rose Bernard episode. It's called SOS. And we'll see you there and next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye, guys.
Lost in My 40s is a Space Bear Media production. Executive produced and edited by me, Lacey J. Sound engineering, editing, and original music by Benjamin Trim. Like and follow Lost in My 40s on Facebook to interact with your hosts. Plus, follow Space Bear Media on YouTube to watch our episode pre-shows. You can also find us at SpaceBear_Media on Instagram and Twitter. Or come to our website, spacebearmedia.com.